Are you ready for a whole new way of being in the world? Welcome to Living from the Inside Out with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is the ABCs of success and the numbers to call to get coaching about having what you want and thriving, or just to explore the inside out understanding. 866-254-1579, toll free in the United States and Canada. That's 866-254-1579. Outside the U.S., you can reach the show by dialing 001-760-918-4300. And as always, I'm going to begin by setting the table, as it were, talking a little bit about what I've come to see as the ABCs, the fundamentals of success. And if it's an exploration you're interested in, I want to sort of remind you, because I've been talking about it a lot, that next week, those of you who are taking part in the Obstacle Course to Success, which is our self-study program at michaelneal.org/obstacle, I'll actually be doing 5 live calls with the group. So if you want to be part of that, you'll be able to join after, but the best time to join would be before Monday. So michaelneal.org/obstacle. So what's fundamental to success? And I mean fundamental as opposed to idiosyncratic, in the sense that sometimes anything can work. Right? So if you just literally wrote down what everyone did to succeed, who's succeeded in any way, you would absolutely find a lot of random factors. You'd find a lot of things to do with timing. You'd find a lot of things to do with a particular strategy. You'd find a lot of things that if you tried to copy them would be extremely unlikely to work for you. But you'd find a few things, and I say this from 27 plus years of studying this as a coach, both with my clients and in the world more generally, that were pretty consistent. And the first time I really noticed this, the way it came to mind surprised me. Because what I noticed was a lot of people would come to me and they'd be frustrated with where they were in their career, where they were in their business, where they were in their life. And as we'd explore it, I'd realize they were just about where you'd expect them to be, given 3 factors. And the first is intentionality. Now, I talk about this a lot of different ways. The world talks about this in a lot of different ways. But intentionality is as simple as, what direction are you aiming in? So if you have no intention, it's not that you can't get somewhere. It's that you're unlikely to keep going when the going gets tough, because you'll just head in a different direction. Right? If you have no sense of direction, if you have no sense of where you want to go, it's not impossible, but it's pretty unlikely you're going to get there. Now, intentionality at one level is about your sense of direction. But at another level, it's about the desire to move in that sense of direction. It's about having an authentic desire, not a I should desire, but an I want to desire. Or wouldn't it be cool if desire? You know the expression, he had no intention of doing that? Or you can do it with yourself, right? Think about something that you want, or that you've been telling yourself that you want, or you've been telling other people you want. Now ask yourself, on a scale from 0 to 100, what's your level of intention? Like, do you really intend to do it at 100? Like, it's going to do or you're going to die trying? Is it 0, as in, I love it, but I have no intention of doing anything about it, which is fine, by the way, but it's good to know. Or is it somewhere in between? Because the truth is, your level of intention will map out pretty well to how far you go, simply because A, it keeps you aimed in a constant direction, which means you get more ideas and insights and possibilities emerging and opportunities emerging in that direction. But 2, because it keeps you going when the going gets tough. Now, the second, if A is intentionality, the second factor is what I call engagement. Like, are you all in? Sometimes people talk about it as commitment. And that's probably a good word for it, except that I have personal issues with it. I don't actually have personal issues with commitment, just with the word. There's something about being fully engaged, being all in, that brings another gear out of us. It brings something extra to the surface. When we're all in, none of our attention is on whether or not we should be doing it, and all of our intention is about how to do it better. We bring more of our mind to bear, and our mind is an amazing thing. It is the gateway to the universal mind. It is the access point to our innate creativity, to our resilience, to our ability to connect with others. You know, the reason commitment in a relationship matters is because when the going gets tough, instead of going, am I in the right relationship, and starting to look around for maybe better relationships, you're just looking for, how do we make this work better? How can I reconnect or connect more deeply? How can I get back to love? How can I do whatever it is that's needed to fulfill the parameters of the relationship? Well, it's the same with any project. If your engagement is low, your results will be sporadic. If your engagement is high, your results will be better. Now, understand, you can have full intentionality, you can have full engagement, and still not pull something off, because not everything is up to us. But it tilts the odds in your favor. If you have high intention, in other words, a clear sense of direction, and you're really in, like, you know, you really are going for it, and you keep showing up to it, because that's part of engagement, is showing up fully, well, you're probably going to do pretty well. And then the third, the C of our ABCs, is time. A, most things worth doing take time to do well. And B, I literally do not know of anyone who's achieved long-term success without putting in hours that your average self-help book would say lead to an imbalanced life. It doesn't mean a miserable life. It doesn't mean an unhealthy life. But a balanced life is not necessarily conducive to the scale and scope of the projects that most people are trying to succeed at. Now, this takes us to an important question. What's your definition of success? And it's something that, I mean, we could do a whole show about that. But I'm using the word success in this instance as your ability to produce a result that you have set out to produce, your ability to intentionally produce a result. So in the abstract, you may say, and I may even agree with you, well, is the person who, you know, burns out and loses their relationships in order to produce the result of a successful company really a success? No, not to my mind. To my mind, any definition of success that doesn't include well-being, that doesn't include other people, is very limited. And we're going to get to that when I talk about ABCs more in a different way. But the truth is, most stuff takes time. And most stuff takes more time than we think it's going to. I tell the story often of a woman who came on one of my coaching programs. She came on, in fact, it may have been the original Super Coach Academy. I can't remember if it was 2010 or 2011. But I watched her coach, and I thought she had real potential. She'd never done it before, but I was maybe the second or third month of the program, and I thought, you know, I think she's going to be really... And I told her I wanted to kind of let her know what I saw. And I said to her, you know, I think given the level of sort of intuitive skill that you're demonstrating, I think within a year and a half, 2 years, you're going to be you're going to really have the beginnings of a successful coaching practice. And she looked at me horrified. And she said, 1.5 to 2 years, I may as well just get a job at the supermarket. And I was taken aback, but I then immediately thought, yeah, you probably would be better off taking a job at a supermarket. Because if you think you're going to become successful at a new career in less than, and I don't know, I mean, it's different for different careers, in less than 1.5 to 3 years. I think 3 years is probably a good base point from the studies I've seen. Well, you're not really operating on planet Earth. Now, that doesn't mean you won't get any results until that point, but it means you're not going to have that sort of stability of result. You're not going to have that consistency. You're not going to yet be at a tipping point where it's easier to stay successful than it is to fail. So, one version of the ABCs is intentionality, engagement, and time. Knowing where you're going, being all in, showing up, and putting in the hours. Now, there's one other factor that I'm going to talk about, but I'd love to talk to you about what would success be to you, and what do you see as standing in the way, and how are you in your ABCs? So numbers to call, 866-254-1579, toll free in the U.S. and Canada, outside the U.S., 001-760-918-4300. And let me talk about the other ABC. So this actually comes from a book, a Hay House book. I always like it when I can promote a Hay House book. It's called Success Is For You, and I'm sure you can get it on the Hay House site or on Amazon. And it's by Dr. David Hawkins, who, if you know of him, you probably know of him for his book Power Versus Force, which is kind of a seminal book on energy and the law of attraction and things like that. And Success Is For You, it's difficult because I believe it was assembled after Dr. Hawkins died, so I don't know if he would have put it in this form, and I didn't know him. So I'm putting lots of disclaimers out there. So if I say anything that is terribly out of whack with what he thinks and what he teaches, that's my fault. That's not on him. That's on me. But the reason I want to share it anyways is because he speaks to something, particularly in this book, Success Is For You, Using Heart-Centered Power Principles for Lasting Abundance and Fulfillment, that I really got. It really matches my experience of working with clients. And he talks about the difference between your ABC, as in the fundaments of your alphabet, the come from in what you're up to, and A, arrow B, arrow C. In other words, A leads to B, leads to C. And what he says is that most people think about success in terms of a set of linear steps. So I start here, and then I go there, and then I go there. A leads to B, leads to C. But the real cause effect is in the come from. It's in the larger purpose. It's in the space within from which you're pursuing success. And the basic rule of thumb with ABC versus A arrow, B arrow, C arrow is that the more universal, the higher the come from, the more effective it will be. And he uses the example of Gandhi versus the British Army. The British Army had more force to bear. They were able to do more, but they were coming from a lower principle. So in the short term, force often wins over power. In the short term, you know, a good strategy will trump a great come from. But over time, the energy of the come from pretty much always wins. The higher come from pretty much always wins. Now, we can talk about that as an abstract philosophical point, and I think it's interesting to talk about as an abstract philosophical point. Or we can think of it in terms of, yes, it's good to want good for humanity. Yes, I agree. But think about it a little more practically. Where does, if you have a drive for success, where does it come from? Is it coming from your insecurity, proving something, proving something about yourself to others, proving, I'll show you dad, I'll show you mom, I'll show you partner, I'll show you whoever. Now that would be a lower ABC, right? Is it coming from fear, right? Oh, God, if I don't succeed, I'm going to starve. If I don't succeed, I'm never going to be happy. If I don't succeed, nobody will ever love me. Or is it coming from abundance? Is it coming from that place in you that already has more than enough? I sometimes use the metaphor for abundance, the visual of a champagne fountain. If you've never seen one, I associate them with 1930s Busby Berkeley musicals. But essentially, there's a glass of champagne on top of three glasses of champagne on top of five glasses of champagne. And it's like a tower. And they pour into the top glass until it overflows. And as it overflows, it fills the three glasses below. And as those three glasses overflow, it fills the five glasses below, and so on and so on and so on. And when you find that place in you, when you're coming from that place in you, everything naturally flows from it. When you're overflowing with something to share, sharing is the most natural thing in the world. When you don't really feel like you've got enough, everything's about filling your glass. Another way of thinking about it that most people I share this with kind of go, oh yeah, I get that one, is imagine going into a room filled with influential people, whatever that means in your world, and asking them for $1 million for your cause. Now, your cause may just be, hey, I'd like to have a nicer life, right? Or your cause may be, well, I want to save children in Africa. Or your cause may be, I want to scale my widget business. And just notice what that would be like for you. Now, for some people, they think, actually, that'd be great because I'd feel really good about asking them. For some people, that's one of the most horrific scenarios I could put out there. Now imagine I give you $1 million and I ask you to go into that room to find people who are worth giving that million to. And you can give it to one person or you can share it amongst the room, but you gotta spend the million because there's going to be another one tomorrow you're going to have to spend. So you got to get rid of it. Like, I don't know if you ever saw the movie Brewster's Millions. There's a few versions of it. There was one with Richard Pryor when I was a kid where essentially the terms of the will is he has to give away $1 million. Legitimately in order to inherit the full fortune. Now, most people, when I invite them to that thought experiment, they get quite excited at the idea of giving away the money. Like, that's a whole different thing because the come from is different. It's coming from a place of giving. It's coming from a place of the betterment of the planet, of society, of life on Earth, of their fellow man. Well, that's a very high ABC. And things that come from that higher ABC not only are easier for you personally, but they're easier for everyone else too. They're easier for other people to enroll themselves in. There's a great definition of an enrollment, which I believe comes from Werner Erhard. And it says enrollment is causing a new possibility to be present for another, so they're touched, moved, and inspired by that possibility. So think about that. Enrollment is causing a new possibility to be present for another, so they're touched, moved, and inspired by that possibility. Well, if you've got a great ABC, if you've got something to give that you really can see will work for the betterment, even if it's the betterment of sprinkler systems, right? It's like, hey, I do something that makes everyone's sprinkler systems do better. Everyone's sprinkler systems do better. There's less hassle. There's less stress. There's better lawns. There's more life in the world. That you can, the come from's right. And when the come from is right, that can overcome a lot of problems in the world. And when the come from is wrong, that can undo a lot of great strategies and a willingness to work really hard and put in the hours. So if you've got, here's maybe an interesting way to do it. Think about something that you are working on in your life, that you are up to in your life. Could be a business thing. It could be a career thing. It could be a for the world thing. And kind of run yourself through these things. So first, we'll go backwards. First, what's your ABC? Like, what's your come from? Why do you want to do this? There's a William O'Hanlon is a wonderful writer. And one of my favorite little models that he has is he says there's really only four reasons why people do anything. there's really only four ABCs. He doesn't use that language, but in our language, that they do things because they feel blessed, blissed, pissed, or dissed. So now a lot can happen from any of those things. So remember, on the outside, in the short term, an ABC is not necessarily obvious. Somebody can make a lot of money or do very well for themselves with an ABC that if you kind of saw it, you'd go, ooh, that doesn't seem like a very inspired ABC. But longer term, that ABC starts to really matter. Well, so dissed is when you're doing something to prove it, to prove people wrong. Hey, you disrespected me, and I'm going to go back, and I'm going to make millions to show you. Ha, ha, ha. Again, you can do a lot from that place, but it takes a lot out of you. Now, pissed is another common one, right? People get into things because they're pissed off about some social condition or something that's going on in the world, and they want to put it right. And again, pissed is great at getting people into action. It's really hard to sustain without staying pissed. Right? And I know if you're British, you're thinking, why do you have to be drunk? But I mean pissed off. I mean upset, angry. So it's coming out of your anger. So you see a lot of stuff going on at the moment in America, and actually all over the world, where people are pissed, and it's getting them into action. But as an ABC, pissed is really hard to sustain because we're not made to be pissed off all the time. We're made to love. We're made to enjoy. We're made to be an expression of whatever this spirit behind life is. And so to stay angry all the time is exhausting. Well, if you're not doing it because you're dissed and you're not doing it because you're pissed, well, what are blessed and blissed? Well, blissed is you've just found something you love doing. So it's still for you, right? But because you love doing it so much, you are fully engaged when you do it. You put in the hours way beyond, not because you're so hardworking, but because you love it so much that you hate to stop. Right? And there tends to be an intentionality because the intentionality is about getting better. The intentionality is about perfection. The intentionality is about beauty. The intentionality is about artistry as much as it is about getting somewhere in terms of results. And those are just a natural offshoot of coming from bliss, from, as Joseph Campbell said, following your bliss. Well, what's blessed? Well, sometimes people do things because they genuinely, their cup runneth over. They feel so blessed. They feel so abundant in themselves. They feel so present to the raiments of the world, to everything that we are given, that they just want to share from that place. And so there's an incredible, I guess, depth and breadth of what can come from blessed. Now, I don't know if these are really a hierarchy. I kind of have just presented them a little bit like that, and I kind of think they are. I kind of think if we're going to make a hierarchy of ABCs have come from, dissed would be at the bottom, pissed would be up from that, blissed would be up from that, and blessed would be at the highest level. But I might be making that up. But it's just fun to think about, a fun way of thinking about it. But so notice for yourself, what's your come from? All right, now a great example of blessed that some people know about, some people, you know, he's been dead longer now, but Buckminster Fuller. If you've never read about Buckminster Fuller, I bet you could probably get a good thing on Wikipedia. Like, I haven't even looked, but Buckminster Fuller was a kind of an extraordinary character. You can also read, I've written about him. If you have my book, Feel Happy Now, there's a whole section on Buckminster Fuller in there. But essentially, Buckminster Fuller, by all accounts, was a spoiled rich kid. And, you know, he came from privilege and he got into drinking and, you know, his insecurities, and he got married and he had a child, but he didn't really want to be married or have the child. And he just drank more. And one day, essentially, he was out drinking. And this is where actually my memory of the story, I don't remember whether it was his wife who died, his child who died, or both, but he lost at least one of them, and it was a wake up. But that wake up was initially, waking up to what a horrible human being he judged himself to be. It was a wake up to shame. It wasn't a wake up to love. And he went to kill himself. He went down to the ocean and he went to drown himself. And the story goes that as he walked into the ocean, he heard a voice. And the voice said, "Your life is not yours to sacrifice. Your life is for the betterment of humanity. You are here for a higher purpose." And for the next year, he didn't speak because he was listening to that voice that had awoken in him. And we could call that voice the voice of God. We could call that voice the inner wisdom or the higher self. We could call that voice the deeper mind, just what I tend to call it. But he'd awakened to the universal in the personal. He'd awakened to that impersonal part of himself that was a part of the larger whole. And he learned to listen over that first year. And he developed a clear intention. And his intention, as he stated it, was to live his life as an experiment. And he christened himself Guinea Pig B. They used to do guinea pigs, and there was Guinea Pig A and Guinea Pig B. He was Guinea Pig B. And the experiment was to see what one person can do when they come from that inner place, that inner wisdom, that inner knowing. And indeed, he went on to do extraordinary things. He went on to something extraordinary, like 64 patents. He went on to, he's the inventor and creator of the geodesic dome. Those of you who've ever seen geodesic domes, which is the strongest structure, man-made structure in existence. He's got the patents. He wrote books. He developed architecture. He was a huge part of a lot of environmental movements as far back as the 1950s and 1960s. And he was the inspiration for a great, great many people. He's just a really cool story. But for me, the coolest thing about his story was his come from. Not what he did, but where it came from in him. Because that place, as best I can tell, is available to all of us. Now, I also get you could just use his story to beat yourself up. I've done that before, too. Well, I mean, you know, if God talked to me, I'd listen. But, you know, in the meantime, I gotta go make the donuts. And at one level, I agree with that. And at another level, that's not true at all. Because I promise you, God or whatever it is talking to you now. That inner voice, not the one that thinks you suck, but the inner voice that guides us. It's like conscience, but it's not a moral judgment. It just kind of keeps nudging you. The inner nudger. Right? That's there now. And when you listen to it, things start to work differently. When you listen to it, life seems to unfold as if by design, where just the right thing keeps happening at just the right time. You meet just the right person with just the right resource for what you need in that moment. And that unfolding comes from your come from. It comes from coming from that deepest place inside yourself. So it's not just a great mission, but it's even where that mission comes from. You know, is it a dist mission, a pissed mission, a blissed mission, or a blessed mission? And here's the neat thing. Start where you are. If the only reason you're in the game is because you feel dist, well, at least you're in the game. Now you can look to upgrade to pissed. Right? And if you're just doing it because you're so angry that nobody else is doing it, well, great. At least you're in the game. Now you can start finding the love of the game. And seeing where the love of the game starts to take you. If you're doing it for the love of the game, great. You're in the game. And it'll probably happen without you having to do anything about it. But as you're in the game for the love of the game, you'll start to wake up to that inner abundance, to that inner health, to that inner connectivity. And it will become about even more than your love. There's a great show, Chef's Table, on Netflix. And I haven't watched the second series, but the first series was just an example of chefs who were changing the world of food from this place, from in a few places you could see. They were doing it from Dist. Somebody had told them they'd never amount to anything. But then you'd see there was a couple of them doing it, pissed with the way people were treating animals and the way people were treating food and the way people were treating customers. And then you could see that there were people, and this was actually pretty much seemed true of all of them, who loved it, who were blissed, who were just doing what they loved doing. And they'd done it for a long time to a very high level of skill with full engagement. But then you could also see that for some of them, food was love. And that love permeated every morsel, every creation. And that love was what expanded their business and what expanded their repertoire and what expanded their capacity to make a difference in the world. I said I'd go to the phones. I wasn't completely lying, but if you do want to get in, 866-254-1579, toll-free in the U.S. and Canada, outside the U.S., 001-760-918-4300. Let's go to Lexington, Kentucky. Hey, Lexington, I don't have a name for you. Who's this? Hello? Ooh, maybe we won't be going to Lexington. All right. Sorry, I've been doing webinars, and on webinars I can see and I can nudge people, but I can't do that on the radio. So, Lexington, if you're there, I'll try you again later. Let me do this, because I want to finish the thought. So I was talking about checking this out for yourself, seeing where you're coming from, and we talked about it in terms of the come from, you know, dist, pissed, blissed, blessed. Where are you on intentionality, engagement, and time? So think again. Think about what you're up to. Something that you're up to. Something that you would like to succeed at. Something that you would like to be successful at. And what's your level of intention? 1 to 10, 0 to 100. Where the bottom end of the scale is, you have no intention of doing this really. Or at least you have no intention of doing anything to make it happen. If it fell into your lap, you might be willing to take it. What's your level of engagement? Like, how in are you? And part of how you know that is how you show up. Do you kind of half-ass it, or are you all in? But also part of how you know it is putting in the hours. You know, how much do you show up to it? If I was a private detective and I was trying to work out what mattered to you just by tracking how you spent your time, would I know this even mattered to you? Would I see any evidence? Would there be anything there that would let me know this was really what you were up to? Because that would tell me about your intentionality. That would tell me about your engagement. That would tell me about whether or not you were putting in the hours. And like I said at the beginning, it's remarkable how consistently people do just about as well as they should, given their level of intention, given their level of engagement, and given the degree to which they're putting in the hours. You know, there's a famous study about the 10,000 hours. Anders Ericsson was the kind of lead on that study, and it's become sort of a touchstone, you know, the 10,000 hours, and not every 10,000 hours are created equal, because you've got to put in 10,000 hours of perfect practice or committed practice, and there's a lot of discussion, but without necessarily getting too county about it. What was it on Sesame Street, the count? 1, 2, 3, like we could, you know, counting your hours up to 10,000. What kind of hours are you putting in? Now, over time, it doesn't take a lot of time. Here's what I mean. You know, one of the things that I wrote about it in my book Supercoach, was the work of a man named Lyndon Duke. And Lyndon Duke was a big proponent of something he called average day, which actually came from the work of a psychologist named Abraham Lowe. Again, use your Wikipedia, kids. He was a very interesting, very cool, very different point of view on psychology. And he had a sort of an average person, average day philosophy. And the basis of the philosophy was that we suffer from what he called the curse of exceptionality. Our desire to be special, our desire to be different, is a double-edged sword, because on the one hand, it can kind of get us to look at life and to do things differently. But on the other hand, it separates us from our shared humanity. It separates us from our innate humanity. It separates us from ourselves. And that being an average person, having an average day, is actually pretty gorgeous. Because we get to just enjoy the simple joys of being alive, of being human. And the way I wrote about it in the book was talking about how little time it actually takes to put in a lot of time. So I remember, now I don't write this way, okay? I'm a deadline writer. I kind of, you know, let the challenge build and build to the point where I don't think I can pull it off, and then I start writing. But if you actually think about it, if you wrote 3 pages a day, right, in 90 days, you'd have a book. Now, not all of those pages would be good, so you might not have a good book yet, but anybody can write 3 pages a day, right? If you put in 30 minutes a day of practice on something within 90 days, you'd be a lot better at it. You'd be noticeably better. So sometimes when I talk about putting in the hours, people go, well, I've got this and I've got that commitment and I've got that. I get it. And a little goes a long way. And if you are coming from a clear intention, if you're coming from blessed and blissed, if you're coming from sort of a place in you of really wanting to share something with the world, of really wanting to express something in the world, of really wanting to make a difference in the world, you'll find the hours. We always do. Right? I used to talk a lot about John Grisham time management. And where it came from is I noticed that no matter how busy I was when the new John Grisham novel came out, I always somehow, my life found a way to orient around reading the book. Like, I didn't fit the book in. I fit my life in around the book. The same schedule that was way too busy to take on anything else completely worked when there was something I really wanted to do. And it's the same with anything. When you find something you really are up to, your life will orient itself around that. And there's something good about knowing that. So, okay. Let's try again. I don't want to risk Lexington, but let's try Kathy in Seattle. Kathy, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Oh, hey, Michael. Thank you for your call, for taking my call and for the conversation we're having today on whole intentionality. And I was agreeing with what you were saying and how the power coming from acting out of feeling blessed and blissed is really, really powerful. And my work is with parents, and I've been doing it for almost 10 years. And it does keep me motivated, and it keeps me wanting to always be improving and giving back. And it's been interesting how things have maybe not worked out exactly my business. It's not like I could say the money's just pouring in, but it came from other places, and so it's enabled me to keep doing this. And I'm wondering about that same concept and applying it to how parents work with their own kids or have a relationship with their own kids, and just if they were coming from a blessed, feeling blessed to have these children, how that would turn things around.
Well, and you see it. You can actually see that because most parents do feel that way sometimes.
Yes.
And they parent very differently in those times than when they're not. And it's funny because often they go, well, okay, how do I parent when I'm not? And I'm not sure that's the best question. Like, I think there's more mileage in how do I get in touch with the blessing of having children more rather than how do I parent well when I'm not in touch with it?
Yes. Yep. Great point.
I had as a guest on the show years ago, way back. I mean, there's a few of you who actually have been listening more than 10 years, but way back, I used to have a lot more guests on the show. And I had an author named Alfie Cohn, who wrote a book that's very well known called Punished by Rewards and a book that's less well known called Unconditional Parenting. And I remember he was talking about how differently we parent when we don't use threats and bribes. And he was very expressive. It was kind of a philosophical more than a practical, but it was kind of a neat thing to explore what unconditional parenting would look like, where there were no threats or bribes and it was all done in the space of unconditional love. And I remember somebody phoned into the show and said, well, I totally get that. I love that. I totally agree with that. But what do you do when you're in a hurry? And he thought about it for a minute and he said, well, don't be in a hurry.
Yep.
And you know, it's again, it's somewhat tongue in cheek because, well, sometimes you just are, but it is recognizing at a very real level that we have some say. We don't have control over it, but we have some say in our come from. And if we don't like our come from, we can let it go and see what else shows up. Hey, give me a better reason for this. Help me see a better place to do this from. And inevitably, that will kind of take us up the elevator, take us up the ladder.
Yes, yes, I am in agreement with all of that. That's, yeah, if we can get to, and it is hard. It is hard in the moment, and it's hard when parents get to a point where they are extremely frustrated with their kids, and it's day in and day out, and they almost don't enjoy their children. They don't enjoy being by their with their kids, and to help them. So my goal is to help them see the beauty in their children, and because I don't think you can parent well until you can see that child's soul and see that, you know, their struggles aren't an insult to you or an attack on you as the parent, but you know that
well, but so this is where the inside out understanding really comes into its own. The understanding of where our feelings come from, the understanding that we are living in the feeling of thought, not the feeling of our children. Because when you see that frustration, the stress, that doesn't come from them, it comes and goes from within your own mind, then you see them as they are, and especially when they're young, which is a time when a lot of parents find them very frustrating, what they are is a pretty pure connection to source.
Yep.
Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you. Bye.
You know, it's true in so many areas that so much of the stuff that we can see that's like, yeah, well, if I could just get past the stress, if I could just see them through the frustration, if I could just get past the insecurity. Well, you can when you see that stress and pressure and insecurity are passing thoughts. They're energy fluctuations in the mind. They're transient. They come and they go. And what's constant underneath them is this connection to the deeper self, the deeper mind. Let's go to Tucson. Let's speak with Keita. Keita, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hello, Michael. I just, you know, I'm just your biggest fan. My question to you is my intentionality, my volition for helping people with spinal injuries through exercise. I see a huge hole in the fitness market of just kind of, you know, addressing the one percenters. So mm-hmm. what I've been doing is following your advice. I've been going on these job interviews, and I have been literally, jobs are just opening up all over to teach this aqua fitness that I'm teaching. And my question to you, what I'm struggling with right now is I would do this for free. I absolutely, after every class, will have 20 students just want to sit and just get information from me because I'm instructing, but I'm inspiring. My question to you right now, and where I have always struggled in life, and I really need your coaching, is around pay. When someone wants to pay me, you know, I've done a job, I always will say, oh, just, you know, send me a check, or, you know, I'll undervalue my worth. And I want to understand, where is that coming from, and what are tools that I can do in my thinking to get me back on track? Because if I frame it that I am helping them walk better, I am bringing vitality, I am bringing energy, I know there's a value to that, I just have a hard time saying it.
Well, what's the cash value of being able to walk?
Exactly.
No, see.
Well,
I can't tell you that, right? So I don't think your problem is, I don't know how to say it. I think it's really hard to quantify.
Right.
And that makes it very difficult to feel good about a number.
Right.
Because it's like, I don't know, $1 million would probably be not too much, and a dollar would, I mean, where do you put that line?
Right.
Which means that trying to logic it out probably isn't where you're going to find your pricing.
Okay.
There's a number. I have found this with everybody, right? So do you work with people by the session, by time, or by session?
You know what, Michael, right now I'm doing everything. I'm teaching group classes, but what's happening out of my group classes, Emma's, I'm literally getting people that want me to come to their homes, want me to come to their moms, their daughter, their kids, you know, whatever they.
Okay, the idea person. Would be that you would work with them until they reached a certain point or for a certain amount of time. What would be the metric?
You know, that's a great question, because in some instances, I would say my goal as a coach is to educate and empower so they don't need me coming back three times a week or one time a week. My goal would be to educate them and empower them in a way that they are set free.
Okay, so do you know, and I'm sorry to be bullying you, but I'm on the radio and I have to. Do you know when they're there? Right? Like, can you tell, okay, this person now can carry on without me?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
then great. Yes, so here's, play a game with me.
Okay. Yep.
If you know, you're not held to any of this. I'm not going to hold you accountable to it.
Yep,
in fact, you can call in next week with a different name and we'll pretend I don't know you.
Right.
But if that was what you were going to do, so if I asked you to come to my home and help my kid get to that point, however short or long it took, is the right price for that? Don't get logical on me.
Okay.
Is the gut price on that more or less than a dollar?
Yes, it's more.
Okay. Is it more or less than $1 million?
Less.
Okay. Is it more or less than $100?
My ping, where you always are saying, listen to your ping, it's $150.
Okay. Cool. So then here's my invitation. Not a challenge even, because this might be a totally wrong direction, but let's play with it.
Okay.
My invitation to you is the next time somebody asks you, make them that offer.
Okay.
And make it as clean as that. Say, look, I don't know if this will take one session or 50 sessions or whatever your range is, but I would like to work with, I will do what you're asking, and I'd like to get you to this point, and we'll work until we're there, and it's going to cost this.
Okay.
See if you find that doable.
Okay.
Because I suspect what you've been up against is not a self-image, self-esteem thought problem so much as literally not being able to quantify it.
Okay. Because I'm going through, as I've been on hold with you, I'm going through all these emotions of like, do you not charge because you don't feel worthy? And then I have this part of me that's like,
yeah,
oh,
I mean, look, I honestly, if
you always got me straight, so you set me straight.
Yeah, it's like I can get really self-conscious too, but it doesn't help me either.
Okay, no, but I love your coaching. I'm telling you, everybody listening, listen to him every week and buy his book. Because when I listen to you, you take that emotional bit out, and I am able to put my feet on the ground and say, okay, we're going to do this week. That's the direction that we're going to go into. So that's what I'll do, and I'll call you back.
Excellent. All right, Geeta, thank you.
Thank you so much. And just bless you for everything. Always, always, always.
And so, you know, and again, you can do that with anything. Right? We always know the price. Now, well, how do I justify that? You don't. How do you justify your phone number? Right? My friend Steve Chandler actually does a whole routine. It's like a stand-up comedy routine about putting up your prices. And, you know, it's like somebody going, well, there's an extra zero in your price. And it would be like somebody complaining about there being an extra zero in your phone number. It's like, yeah, I know. Yeah, if you want to reach me, you got to dial that number. There's an extra zero in it. Let's go to Queens and let's speak with Mel. Mel, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Oh, hey, Michael. I've been listening to the show, and it's been great. So far, I had a quick question. I've been experiencing some, I guess, obsessive thoughts, or been sort of, you know, basically, I have not dated anybody for a long, 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 long time. I've been focus more on my family and trying to get some business and financial things together. And in the midst of all that, whenever I'm outside or whatever, I can have if you're having a wonderful day, and I'll see somebody who'll catch my eye. And because of some other responsibilities I'm having, I don't know, I guess I get focused on a certain type of person, and then I never really approach them, and then I feel a certain type of way, and it happens over and over and over. I'm not sure what it is, but it happens every day. And after the, I guess, you know, seeing somebody who I like, who I don't approach, or maybe I approach and it doesn't work out, I feel a certain type of way. So that's more of a deeper question, but I was calling you because you have, you know, you talk about the principles, and I know about your work and the inside out, you know, approach. And my quick question was, how do you know when the feelings you feel is appropriate? Based on the experience you're having, I was thinking about it in my head.
Well, like let me try, and again, because we're up against the clock a little bit. Try and answer two parts. No, it's okay. Suddenly we had a full board, so I was just trying to make my way through. So
that's okay.
So let me take you in two directions. So one, in answer to the specific question, how do you know which feelings to trust? You get a feel for it. We all have to get our own feel for. Now with me, I know that if I'm feeling kind of unsettled, if I'm feeling niggly, if I'm feeling short-tempered, if I'm feeling desperate or like urgent, I know that that's not worth following. I've just learned that in me. I also know in me that when I'm feeling expansive, when I'm feeling quiet on the inside, even if I'm quite noisy on the outside, which I often am, if I'm in a thoughtless but not mindless state, that what comes through there is usually worth following. So that's the answer to that. But I want to address the other part very quickly. I want to make you an invitation, an offer, which is this week, if you are up for it, I would like you to make your homework to start conversations with a bunch of people you're not interested in.
Okay.
And just get over that. Because my guess is, now you might find that really easy, which is great. We'll go somewhere else next time, but it's almost like trying to play a concerto the first time you sit down at the piano. If you get really comfortable just striking up conversations with random strangers, it's gonna be that much easier when there's somebody that you've got the thought that there might be something more there. So you up for that as an experiment?
Yes, I am. I am.
Excellent.
Very much.
I will look forward to hearing back. Thank you, Mel. Thank you all. If you enjoy what we're talking about on the show, as I say, we've got a week of calls starting next Monday, September 11th, as part of the Obstacle Course to Success, michaelneal.org/obstacle. Until then, have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.